And yeah, this reminds me that I tend to talk. Benioff, thank you very much for your interesting presentation. I know you had to cover a huge amount quickly, and that must be a bit frustrating. I find myself thinking about how this comes into the secular world.
Okay.
And in particular, what I was thinking about is both working as a supervisor of staff in Kosovo, where I was working for a Catholic organization, and so the staff had to understand Catholic social teachings, but most of them were Muslim, at least by background. And we had a fascinating day where I gave a training on the social teachings, and at the end of the day, most of the Muslims were saying, well, yeah, so those are all the values that we share. And that gave me the insight of, if we would come into secular settings and talk about our faiths and discover the commonalities, we might right there help on the ground to get people to think differently about each other's religions and not be so afraid to encounter them. And then as I think about being in Bangladesh, that in Bangladesh, there was an assumption of a Muslim society, but you didn't talk about it because it was a secular country. And so there was this odd dynamic on the staff where religion was very present daily. Many of our staff members actually would do the call to prayer, or would participate in the call to prayer, and others didn't talk about it. And I thought, how can I bring into this secular setting open conversation that provides this kind of interaction that you're talking about? So I'm wondering whether that's discussed in these forums and whether there are materials that might help us.
Shall we take a few more? How does this work? If there are any, or shall I just take Sarah? Okay, Flutter has got something. Thank you, Sarah, for that.
Thank you so much, Peniel. My question is still undergoing fermentation, so I don't know if it will make sense at this point. Looking at what you have shared, and I also know your work a lot from work, I realized that, you know, like the approach of Yatra that you have taken is really a kind of building, like this, what this interfaith, this quotation says, that you are building that interfaith cooperation and tolerance, and even, you know, a kind of like an approach where young people grow up knowing about each other and learning that actually they are not enemies. My question has to do with an African who comes from a context where most of these religions were missionized, and they also brought, it was like for Christianity, it came with the flag and the Bible in the same at the same time. And therefore, the suspicion is not just at the level of the different religious traditions, but it's also at another level of colonialism and the power of the colonialists and the missionaries against the local people, and therefore there are elements of racism, bias, and all that. Some of the coping mechanism has been to form a Christianity or an Islamic society that is resistant to the original ideology of Christianity and Islam. I don't know if I'm making sense. So we have an African Christianity that is actually very different from the Christianity as we know it, in theology and all that. And so when it comes to interfaith and cooperation and dialogue, I struggle with the whole problem of how do you approach it? How do you approach it in that complex society, like in Africa, for example?
Yes.
Thank you very much for that excellent presentation. My question is, when you look at the world at the moment, the major problem experienced globally is terrorism. And we are told that it's all because of ISIS, which is trying to inculcate their faith, especially among the youth. What is the WCC doing to counteract that? Thank you.
Okay. Those are some big questions.
Yeah, another one. Yeah, thanks for the presentation. And my question really goes along the line that Sarah raised earlier, that in many cases, different religions find commonalities when they look at their core values. And this has also been the case where actually many religions have lived together for years peacefully. And I'm wondering, where do you see the role of politicization of religion, where actually religion is manipulated for other interests, whether they be political or economic ones? Thank you.
Thank you for the excellent presentation. My question is on the aspect of responsibility. Where is the space for responsibility for the parts where faith has been used as a basis for oppressing other people or discriminating other people? Why isn't the aspect of responsibility brought out so that people openly own up and say it's in the name of faith that we committed these? But also, where is our framework for owning up and apologizing and creating and actually admitting that we have been wrong in some actions, and that we take a bit of the responsibility for some of shown out there in response to some of the wrongs that we have done.
Mm-hmm. Shall we? Shall I respond before I go strike? Yes. Thanks, Ray. Yes. I'll probably start with Sarah. Yes. How do we, if I understand your question right, Sarah, it's about how we bring back religion to the secular, into secular discussions where there is a lot of the convergence of values. Yes? I think that one of the ways in which I see that slowly coming back in some ways, because I think now the international bodies are able to recognize the role that religion plays among grassroots communities in engaging with several pressing questions. For example, there is a program that we are working with the UNHCR, which is going to happen in December, on statelessness, religion and statelessness, and the role that faith communities can play in engaging with the question of statelessness. Because religious communities are there on the ground, right? They register births, they register deaths, and they have some records which can be used in arguments for ascribing nationality and other things. And given the fact that there is a religious presence at the local level anymore, I think some of the bodies like the UN are beginning to take note that religion plays a big role. But how we get that in discussions in the workplace and other things, I think that is a question which differs from different parts of the world, because there are some parts of the world where bringing religion to the discussion is not allowed. In work and other settings, is not allowed. But slowly, I see religion coming back into the picture when it concerns issues, which is a good thing. But there's a lot of work. I think that is an area of need. But that should, in one way, also prevent religions from not seeing people who do not profess a religion as having the same aspirations for justice and peace that people of religious communities have. So I think the time is probably right, not just for interreligious dialogue, but also a dialogue which goes beyond religions, a dialogue which involves people who have no faith too, if you have to build communities which are just and peace. So it is interesting that when the WCC's program on interreligious dialogue was set up, the name given to this program was Dialogue with People of Living Faiths and Ideologies, which also involved Marxism, and probably today it might even include atheism. I think this is one space where the door for conversation has to be left open. Okay? As somebody says, if we work, I think it's Confucius who says, if we walk with two, we at least learn from one. So I think we need to have as many dialogue partners as possible, religious and non-religious, because that increases the possibility that we at least learn from one. Yes, Fulata, about the relationship between colonialism and what colonialism has done to places like Africa, and how do we respond to forms of religion which have reacted to this colonial influence, if that is a right way of putting it. I think one way I can speak from the Indian context, there have been several ways in which Indian Christians have responded to colonial influence. It has not been good in India too, because it has been particularly damaging of indigenous cultures and traditions. But what has been done as a form of resistance is for Christianity to reroot itself in various forms of Indian culture. And what has happened earlier during post-independence time in India, it only used to be Indian Christianity reincarnating itself along using cultural elements from dominant forms of religion. But today, even subaltern communities, which means communities on the ground, which are oppressed communities, are also trying to root their Christianity, make their Christianity root itself in their own cultural experiences. One way of saying that Christianity is very incarnational, in the sense that it has the capacity to root itself in a particular religious tradition. The fact that Jesus became Word and came down, yes, is the very basis in which Christianity is being rethought of and relived in many parts. And I know that there are several ways in which African Christians have rerouted in many parts of Africa, have rerouted themselves through indigenous forms of Christianity. Of course, inculturation brings with it its own difficulties, but still, that is one way in which we have responded to colonialism. But colonialism still continues to be a problem for other religious traditions. So, because I see that even today in India, colonialism is invoked to target Christians. There are forms of nationalisms which have evolved, which are very religious, very religiously identified nationalisms, which identify themselves with the majority religious tradition. And therefore, one of the problems that it poses for Christians, especially in India, is accusing Christianity of being very colonial in its approach. Though modern-day Christians may not be really colonial in that sense. So it still produces real problems for Christians on the ground. So the legacy of colonialism is a difficult and a complex thing. But there are ways of handling it, and one of the ways of handling it is to actually have what I call interreligious literacy, where we learn together about people of other religious traditions, and also take into consideration the fact that religions are dynamic. Okay, religions are always changing. In a globalized world, no religion is static. Okay, Hinduism is not what it was. In the same way, Christianity is not what it was. And in some ways, there are ways in which we respond to what is happening around us. And to take that into consideration is something which is important for us to have relationships which both repent for the wrongs of the past, but also help us to move beyond to new forms of religious being, which are much more life-affirming and peace-oriented. Okay, terrorism. That was a big question. What is the WCC doing to counter terrorism? There is always a lot that the WCC can do, but one of the ways in which I, to be honest, I, I, I have problems with the way in which the word terrorism is selectively invoked today in today's world. I think several of you here in the room also have. Because I think we have this propensity, of course, we understand that certain religious traditions, the level of radicalization within certain religious traditions is probably much higher. But still, to selectively invoke the word terrorism for particular religious traditions is really problematic. And we don't invoke the same word when it comes to Christianity, right? Yes. So if we look at terrorism as an act of terrorizing other people, and what the WCC has done to counteract terrorism, one of the things which happened recently, and my colleague Claire Amos, who works on Christian-Muslim and Christian-Jewish relations, has been doing this. We've had some conversations with high-level Muslim leaders from the Al-Azhar University in Egypt, the Grand Imam, and the questions that have been placed on the dialogue table are also the questions of radicalization and violence. We haven't termed it, we haven't used the word terrorism deliberately for that. But also at the same time, we also are trying to see how we see religion-initiated or religion-centered acts of violence, not only in relation to particular religious communities, but also as it happens everywhere, okay? So that we do not only target particular religious communities as being part of the problem and we being the better ones, but also see how all religions probably are part of the problem in different ways. For example, as I said, in Myanmar, it's a big issue. So that is one thing that we've done. The role of politicization of religion. The role of politicization of religion is a big question, especially in South Asia, where I mostly work. I think the way in which religious nationalism has emerged in a way where religion is one religion, the religion, majority religion is politicized. Politicized for the favor of the majority of the population against other religious traditions is a real problem, and there's a lot more which needs to be done on that. So one of the things that we've been working, I was in Bangladesh last year, and one of the things that we worked on was the question of growing religious nationalism. Bangladesh is secular, enshrined in the constitution, though in some ways, in a very ambiguous way, it recognizes Islam as sort of official religion, which is unique to Bangladesh. But at the same time, yes, we were there when killings of Hindus were happening, and we had some conversations about this. So I think what is happening in the politicization of religion is that political leaders see potential in flaring up religious sentiments for the sake of staying in power. So how do we build up communities which resist this politicization? So how do we build up a mass which is other-centered and doesn't seek the well-being or remain quiet when violence is targeted against people of other religious traditions? As I pointed out in my presentation, I think when we talk of interfaith hospitality, it involves standing in defense of the other. Okay, it involves standing to protect the other, especially when the other is in threat. So that is something that we need to do. And responsibility that Gladys raised is an important thing. Responsibility involves taking stock of where we have gone wrong, and therefore we need that framework of honesty, which is crucial. We need that framework of honesty. All religions need to own up to where we have gone wrong and commit ourselves to making a new start. And I'll finish with just one quote. Very often we behave as if religions are fortresses to be defended, whereas in fact they are actually wellsprings for the flourishing of life, not just our own life, but all life. And therefore, the challenge now for religious communities is stop pretending that our religions are fortresses that we need to defend, but rather make sure that the waters of healing, the waters of hope that come from this wellspring called religion are really available for the flourishing of our religious communities. Thank you.